Peter Gagg, who drives it through. Oh, that's a magnificent goal, a sensational goal by the Hullamore captain, Mitchell van der Gagg.
We had the high notes on the park. That's how we became a great team together, you know. It was just unfortunate, we never won anything.
Lane's in trouble, there's the kick. The super sub has done it again.
Without supporters, you cannot play a game. They are a very, very important part of the club.
Jukovic on the chase, might get there. Handel is with it. Jukovic! Oh, wow! Oh, wow! Lukas Jukovic!
I remember to this day, it was unbelievable. And that's another reason I love going back to Fir Park, because you do get to interact with the supporters again, who were wonderful for me.
Chance here for Motherwell. This is Pettigrew, outnumbered though, still has it. Chance of a lifetime for Pettigrew, and it is here!
Yeah, obviously being on the podcast is everything I've dreamed of.
Goes through the middle though, Marvin Johnson. Defenders backing off. It's a good deflection!
Hello and welcome to the MFC podcast. Today myself and Jay in the front seat of my Renault Clio are recording. Jay, welcome along.
Cheers, nice for having me in your motor.
Yeah, that's, put the window down a wee bit more if it gets too warm. A fantastic result yesterday, 2-1 victory as I said. We went a goal down and responded in fantastic fashion. Ryan Bowman headed in the equaliser before Louis Moult scored what was a very special goal. Fantastic to see him grab that first goal from open play this season as well, and in the league action. Yeah, a very satisfying 3 points.
Aye, started really, really well, which I think was a really important thing. In fact, there's a few pointers, I think, for last week's podcast that we talked about that I think, you know, were perhaps changed for the better this time. You know, we mentioned Louis Moult, perhaps going back to the Louis Moult of last season, rather than the one that perhaps started this season with the petulance and the throwing himself about and the moaning and the huffs. And I think we got that. We mentioned last week about how we were missing Elliot Freer, and I think that yesterday showed just how massively we were missing him. I thought he was an integral part of the win. And we mentioned how we've started every game really poorly this season, well, in the league games at least, and yet I thought we started, you know, brightly. We were the better team, obviously, as you said, went a goal behind, and yet what we've seen from the team so far is, even although when we do go behind, we do have the mentality and the character to get back in it, and I think we were fully deserving of the 3 points.
Yeah, absolutely. We talked about as well the kind of missing link almost with Elliot Freer being out. It was a very impressive return for him as well.
Aye, I think it's just what he does isn't particularly, you know, he's not like a overly skillful winger, he's not like a Chris Humphrey speed demon or anything like that, but what he does is he's positive, he's enthusiastic, he gets the ball, he moves it forward 5 to 10 yards and he gets it in the box, and we've missed that, and I think it was causing a lot more problems. He was linking up well a lot in the first half in particular, a lot of what he was doing in terms of linking up with Rose, linking up with Dunn behind him, it was all good stuff, and he was involved in a lot of the positive stuff we were doing. And I think, you know, during the cup games he seemed to get a bit of flack for some reason, despite being involved in pretty much everything we did in the cup games, and I think we've just seen over the last few games, and then it was confirmed yesterday that when he's not there we miss him.
The other thing that struck me about yesterday's game, and it was a conversation I had up at Fir Park earlier, where we maybe got to about 60-70 minutes yesterday, and it's quite rare in the Motherwell game that you're not looking at that team on the park and going, he needs to change this, or someone's toiling. For the first time I think we had a 11 on the park that were all performing really well, and there was no great need to change it. Stephen Robinson did eventually change it, I think, particularly Louis Moult again looked like he was maybe tiring towards the conclusion of the game. You make a few changes deep into the game, perhaps just to waste a couple of minutes winding down the clock. But I think that we're getting a bit closer to the point where we've got what seems like Stephen Robinson's strongest 11, and then we've got a very good group of guys on the sidelines as well, pushing quite hard to get in. Gail Bigorama, I think most of us would expect he was a first pick. He's had to drop out. You've got Alan Campbell pushing, and Alan Campbell came on ahead of Bigorama yesterday, which shows the faith that Stephen Robinson's got in him as well.
I think you know, Robinson's post-match comments he made about the fact that, you know, it's not about having a strongest 11, it's about having strength and depth and the team changing week on week if it needs to. And I think that's exactly it. I think, you know, it can be easy to sort of, you know, you kind of hear it a lot, particularly when you're a manager, that, oh, he doesn't know what his best 11 is, he doesn't know what his strongest 11 is. The best situation to be in is that you don't necessarily have a strongest 11. You've got the strongest 11 on any Saturday, and then, you know, that can change from week to week. A couple of weeks ago, for example, I think a lot of us would have, you know, perhaps had Tanner in there. And yet, I think yesterday showing that Tanner, at the moment, isn't in our strongest 11. I think it's the best position to be in. And you mentioned the changes. Again, we sung Robinson's praises last week in terms of changing the game. I think the changes that he made were the right changes at the exact right time. I think particularly Alex Fisher. Fisher came on, and again, he's one of these guys who, the longer he goes without scoring, folk are going to get in his back, folk aren't going to pay much attention to what's going on. And yet, he came off the bench, and what he did brilliantly. He held the ball up, he took it into the corners, he chased down lost causes, and he played, even though he was only on the park for, I don't even know how long, 10, 15 minutes, something like that, he played a really important part in his, you know, winning that game. And I've no doubt that Robinson would have put him on for that purpose. So you've got a bench there, you know, you're putting out 11 of good players. You've got a bench there of players who can come on and actually change it. You're not looking at the bench and going, right, we've got one or two guys there who can come on and change the game or make a difference. You've got a bench there of decent quality. And yet, you know, with the transfer window about to close, I know that there's still rumours about our own players, but if we are still genuinely looking at another defender, another striker, then, you know, we've actually got a lot of strength and depth at the moment.
But again, I think in what was a great team performance, there is always individuals that stand out, and Cedric Kiepre is very quickly becoming... I think I love him, to be perfectly honest. But cult hero, he's got all the makings of someone that could go in and have a very good relationship with the supporters. This week he obviously signed a extension to his deal as well. It's quite ironic, I suppose, in the sense that he came in and, as a trialist. I don't think anybody expected him to enjoy the success that he has done. I don't even know if he was the first pick to be signed amongst those trialists.
Aye.
But the fans clearly really taken to this guy, and rightfully so, because it was another very good performance yesterday.
He's brilliant. It's just everything about him. He's not just a great defender, he's good with the ball at the feet, he's calm. It's just, you know, he'll go through brick walls, he just ticks all the boxes. He's one of those players where, you know, a lot of people kind of mention at the moment the fact that Rangers aren't scoring goals, and, you know, how, you know, Louis Moult might be back in their radar because of that. I know it's far too early and it would never happen at the moment, but you talk about Celtic at the moment, like their void of centre-halves and having to play a near beat on and all that at centre-half. Kiepre would have strolled through the Champions League qualifiers for Celtic. He's absolutely brilliant. He's a great player. And, you know, the club have acted, you know, really quickly to get him, you know, that extension, which obviously means that there's a wee bit more calmness, I suppose, in the support. You're not watching a cult hero rise in front of your eyes knowing that he'll sign a pre-contract in January. You know, you've got a great player there. Seems to really enjoy playing and playing in front of the Motherwell support. And he's just brilliant. It's fantastic. And, you know, every time he practically touched the ball on Saturday, he was getting, you know, Kiepre, and all that kind of thing. It's brilliant. It's great to have that because, again, you know, the last couple of seasons have been quite negative, a lot of negativity. Both, you know, that connection between the players and the fans hasn't been there. The football you've been watching has been pretty dire, and it's just felt a bit of a chore going to Motherwell games and stuff. But now, you know, with guys like Kiepre and others, and obviously we hold on to the likes of Moult and stuff like that, then, you know, there's a bit of a buzz going back to Motherwell games. Even although, you know, I don't think MD's getting carried away and thinking that we're on the march to European football or anything like that. I think just there's just a bit of excitement again about going to watch this team.
Yeah, and that also reflected in the attendance yesterday. Over 4,000 Motherwell fans at the game. The initiative to reduce the kids' season tickets obviously playing a part in that. Again, that's a smashing thing to see, and kind of the younger generation getting along to Fir Park, hopefully the fans of the future. And the people are coming out in their numbers, and I suppose that is because the brand of football is more appealing. We went into yesterday's game with 3 points from our first three matches. Hardly a spectacular points tally, but 6 out of 12 is a very decent haul from four
very
tough games. Bustad's kind of cliche that he likes coming out with every week, that there's no easy games in the league, but it's absolutely true.
Aye, I mean, you talk about the attendances and stuff like that. I mean, we mentioned a good few times over the summer about there being a bit of a feel-good factor about Fir Park, and how it seemed quite strange that that was the case, given it being such a dire, you know, season the year before. And yet here we were, you know, some sort of fan ownership and the best pitch in Scotland and all the other things that were going on. That excitement about signings and things like that. It just felt a bit strange at times, because on the one hand you had a lot of maybe not negativity, but a bit of indifference or a bit of disappointment that we went for Robinson, or went with Robinson as manager, when, you know, he was seen as maybe the cheap or the easy option. There was, you know, again, a lot of scepticism about fan ownership that still exists. There was the fact that we'd, you know, narrowly missed the playoffs, and yet all over the summer it was really kind of positive and feel good factor, and I think that's just kind of carried on. Even although, you know, you had the 4-1 defeat at McDermott Park, you were beaten by Rangers, I mean, that feel good factor has remained, and I think that's a big part of it. And when you've tied that in with the initiatives of, you know, cheaper season tickets or season ticket deals and that kind of thing, and also the fact that we're playing, you know, I wouldn't say it's a, you know, a great brand of football at the moment, we're playing reasonably well. But, well, you know, you've got guys in the park who'll run through brick walls for the strip. You've got guys who are responding to the support again. You've got that connection between the fans and the players start to develop again, which we've not seen since the Stuart McCall days. And I think it all comes together just to, as I said earlier, just make it really, really exciting going to Fir Park again, which hasn't been there for, you know, a couple of seasons.
Yeah, and we're going to the international break now, and it's almost a disappointment. To be honest, for me, it's always a disappointment having to break up club football. I much prefer it to international football. I know it's slightly different with yourself. You hope that that doesn't spoil any sort of momentum, though. Knowing that Stephen Robinson is going to keep the guys working over that break, he seems like a guy that is driving on his players to do their very best. He's working long days with Keith Lasley, trying to, just striving for this club to be the best it possibly can. He says that we're not going to match teams in terms of financial clout, or sometimes we're not going to be able to put out a team that's better ability-wise than teams like Hearts, but what they're clearly going to do is they're going to fight for each other for the 3 points. And yesterday, I think squad on squad, it would be hard to argue that Hearts aren't a stronger squad than we've got, but we certainly out-muscled them and out-fought them over the 90 minutes.
Aye, I mean, in terms of breaking up the momentum and stuff, I suppose it's one of those ones where it will only break up the momentum if the players and the manager and all that allow it to. At the end of the day, you know, you've got the international games there, and I mean, for somebody like Cadden, for example, we won't break it. If Cadden remains after the transfer window, you would like to think that if he goes and does really well with under-21s with Scotland, then, you know, that will, his momentum will be even more so when he comes back. But I think it's down to the staff and the players to keep that momentum going. If you allow yourself to maybe be a bit disappointed and think, oh well, you know, we could have really done with a club game this Saturday, then perhaps the momentum will start to dissipate. But at the end of the day, if you go to training and go, right, here's what we need to work on, here's what wasn't good enough, let's make sure by the Kilmarnock game we've worked on that, then you can keep it going. I mean, at the end of the day, whether the game's on Wednesday or a week on Saturday, you know, the momentum can be continued if you want it to be. You know, it's only a number of days between games. It's just up to yourself how you deal with it.
We'll go on and talk, because about this, the close of the transfer window, there's been speculation over the majority of it that player A is going to go and player B, but the likes of Cadden, Mole, Hennigan, as of Sunday, 4 days before the window closes, all remain at Fir Park for now anyway. I suppose we can be very satisfied with our dealings over the summer. What is it now, 12, 13 new arrivals? The Lithuanian forward arrived, and
what's his name?
Over the international break, that's what I'll be tasking myself with doing. I'll be trying to learn how to pronounce his name. But a lot of new faces to bed in. Maybe the international break won't be a bad thing in that sense, to continue these guys getting to know each other and working together. Who would you expect to see potentially leaving over the next coming days? Would you expect anybody to leave?
I don't know. I mean, as I've said before, I think it's, you know, you get weeks upon weeks of people talking about speculation and who's linked with who, as though it really means anything up until now. This is when it actually means something. At the end of the day, as we've said before, there might have been, you know, just because it seemed as though there was no interest in Louis Moult, you know, or there was nobody inquiring or making bids, it doesn't mean that he wasn't third or fourth on, you know, a couple of clubs' lists of possible targets. And it's this week that they start to miss out on first, second, third, fourth, or they start to lose their own forward. You know, it might just be that they're no bother looking at anybody else because they're quite happy with their forward, with their forward options. Then another club comes in, pays money for one of their strikers, and suddenly they're looking around for somebody to replace them. So, you know, whether or not there has been any concrete bids or interest or scouting, for me it's been relatively irrelevant up until these few days. This is when, you know, it'll all happen. And so I think it's, you know, it's all hypothetical. Do I think MD will leave? You know, it's one of those ones where I wouldn't be surprised if nobody leaves. Just because of that, I don't think, you know, Cadden, Hennigan or Moult, who seem to be the three main ones, I don't think any of them appear to have been number one targets for any clubs. But I'd be surprised if, you know, one or two of them, if not all three, are on the, you know, on a list somewhere. As potential targets, and then it's just down to, you know, fate. You know, who do these clubs get, who do they not get, and then do they come in with a late bid? As I think Buster said on last week's podcast, the priority for us is to be in a situation where if one of those bids do come in quite late on, we're not being left in a Marvin Johnson situation again, where we need to wait to the following January to get in a replacement. And we need to be in a position where should something happen, we know the targets, we know the important players who, you know, are probably going to attract interest. So we need to be in a position where we're at least trying right up to the end of the transfer deadline to replace them if they do go. And I'll be honest, up until maybe a couple of weeks ago, of the three, I think we probably all said it. You know, I would really love to keep Cadden, would really love to keep Moult. I would have said up until maybe a couple of weeks ago that Ben Hennigan could go if we could get a couple of grand. But I'll say, I think that under Stephen Robinson in this back three, Ben Hennigan's playing the best football now than he has done since he came here. I think he's a crucial part of that back three now. So I'd be really disappointed to see any of them going. But it's up to us. You know, again, as we've said before, our philosophy now is to bring in players for the English leagues or develop our own, both for selling on. And that's all three of those, you know, Cadden, Moult, Hennigan, that all three of them are part of the business model. And if bids come in that make sense, the club needs to accept them, but also needs to be in a position that we're not, you know, you talk about momentum, you don't want to halt the momentum because you've lost a couple of your crucial players and nobody able to replace them.
Yeah, and of course we're not awash with money. We have to box clever in terms of finances, but it does seem reassuring that the club are in an even keel, so to speak, just now. So there's not going to be any accepting a daft bid just because.
Aye.
Like, I think in the past we've been a bit frustrated that the guys, for instance, Jamie Murphy, that left for such a minimal fee when his contribution to Motherwell over 6 or 7 years was fantastic. Maybe back then it was just absolutely essential that we did sell a player to continue operating to the next window, but that's clearly not the case just now, so we don't have to do anything out of desperation.
Well, that's it. I mean, again, don't want to kind of do the whole recruitment thing for the Welsh Society, but at the moment the Welsh Society is the investor at Motherwell. You know, Ross County have got Roy McGregor, Thistle have got the Weirs. It's the Welsh Society, and that's why people need to put money in, because the money they put in goes straight into the club. And at the moment, because of fan ownership, the club is budgeting in a way that basically sees the club aim for remaining in the division. Anything else is by and large a bonus, whether it's selling players or you know, cup runs. That's not to say that those aren't aims and expectations, but they're not budgeted in the way that they used to be. You know, we used to speak a good fairly often about how risky the Leanne Dempster model seemed to be at times, when we appeared to be budgeting to be top six, cup runs and sell a player every year. And so that's when you put yourself in that situation, because you're sitting there with Jamie Murphy and, you know, you're maybe valued him at 800 grand and there's bids coming in at 200, 300, and you're thinking, right, well, we need to sell him because we've budgeted to sell a player. And then he goes. That's not the case now. We're not budgeting that way. We're budgeting to be, you know, to be safe and to put yourself in a position where if things click, or you get a couple of young boys that come through and do particularly well, or you sign somebody like Kipri, who turns out to be fantastic, then you can go and push for possibly the top six, or, you know, a good cup run or whatever. But it's not what you're actually, you know, budgeting your future on. And that's the difference. So it means that, aye, if bids don't come in for the 700 grand of Louis Moult's, that Louis Moult's been valued for, then they won't be accepted. Same with Chrissy Cadden. You know, Robinson's already come out and said that we'll be due about 600 odd grand if he goes at the end of his contract. So there's no need for the club to sell. And again, that's a good positive of fan ownership, because it's not someone else setting the agenda here. It's essentially the fans that are setting the agenda, that means that we are setting the, you know, how things are run, so that, you know, there is no sort of desperation sales or anything like that. We're in a very comfortable position.
Yeah, and he said it wasn't a marketing pitch there, but I suppose the kind of the headline from that is that we're not going to push our assets out the door.
Like, yeah.
That's something that's been levelled at the club in the past, that you're selling your best player, and not only that, you're actually desperate to sell your best players to whatever bid comes in, so that's not going to be the case.
I mean, again, that might happen in the future. Again, that fan ownership's here. You know, there'll be folk who probably listen and go, well, I'm not a member of the Welsh Society because I'm cynical, I don't think it's, you know, viable, or I don't trust the people doing it and stuff. That's actually secondary now. The money that people put into the Welsh Society goes straight into the club. That's about 140 grand a year that the Welsh Society put into the club. So if you go, the Welsh Society actually published the kind of the clubs, you know, this is no secret or anything, the Welsh Society published what the club kind of spend its budget on, and the vast majority is on the playing budget. So that 140 grand, the vast majority of that goes into the club, which logically then goes mostly into the playing budget, just the way the club divvies stuff up. Now, you obviously can't trace that, if you put a fiver in, that's going to go directly into Louis Moult's pay packet. The Welsh Society just gives the club the money, and the club then divvies that up. But logically, that means that there's a bigger playing budget there. So that means if more Welsh Society members put, you know, doubled how much they're putting in, or put a wee bit more in, or more Welsh Society members joined, then there would be 150, 160, 200, 250, 300 grand going into the club, which would mean, without question, your playing budget would increase. And that's when you could maybe go, right, well, this season we're going to budget for top six and things like that. So it's all tied together. But by the same token, if, you know, fans decided, oh, I'm not going to bother paying into the Welsh Society anymore, and the Welsh Society starts putting in 90, 80, 70, 50 grand into the club, then your playing budget gets decreased, and that's when you would end up having to sell players out of desperation. And it's probably when you'd also probably see the club relegated, because the playing budget possibly would have to get slashed so much that you wouldn't be able to compete. So there's absolutely no doubt now that if fans want to be challenging for further up, or want to see guys like Kipri getting an extension, there is no way Cedric Kipri would have been offered that extension if the club didn't have the money in the playing budget essentially given by the Welsh Society. So it's all tied together now. I mean, the better the Welsh Society does, the better the club does on the park. It's pretty much as simple as that. And again, the more money the Welsh Society is putting in, the stronger or the more confident you can be in days like this, when it's a run up to the transfer window, you've got some assets and you don't need to sell them on the cheap.
This weekend, the under-20s play their Iron Brew second round. I think it's the second round, might be the third round.
The research.
Tie, yeah, against Crusaders in Belfast. We'll now actually be joined by Chris Jack, who is a big Motherwell supporter and has also moved to Northern Ireland and has covered quite a few Crusaders games. So we'll get a wee bit of insight, and hopefully we'll be able to bring them down from the inside as well, so we can progress in that cup tie. Chris, thank you for joining us, mate. It's been a wee while, but nice to have you back on.
No problem. Always a pleasure. I don't get enough of a chance to talk to anybody about Irish League football or Motherwell Football Club for that matter these days. So it's good to come on and hopefully give a bit of an insight into what the Motherwell under-20s and anybody coming over to beautiful Belfast this weekend is going to get for their money this weekend.
Yeah, well, obviously, as a bizarre set of circumstances, I suppose, a Scottish team facing off against a Northern Irish side in a cup competition, what is generally regarded as a domestic cup competition as well. But
yeah,
this should be a very interesting challenge for Motherwell. Crusaders, obviously, a fairly established side in the Northern Irish League. They come with a bit of pedigree and a reputation. What should we expect from Crusaders, first and foremost, on Saturday?
Well, first of all, I think you used the word challenge there. I think that will be exactly what it is. The Crews, they're a tough team. They've been flying high at the top of the Irish Premiership for the last couple of seasons. They've won it two out of the last three seasons. Stephen Baxter, their manager, has had them playing probably the most exciting and most attractive football in the Irish League, because, you know, made no bones about it, as much as I've loved getting right into the Irish League, it is very agricultural, to say the least. But Crews are one of the teams that are probably the more fluent going forward. The reason that they're in the Iron Brew Challenge Cup this season is from finishing second in the league last year. They lost the league on the very last day of the season. They'd been leading the whole league from pretty much, I think it was the third week onwards, because I think Ards had won their first couple of games by more goals. But from then right up until May, Crews were at the top of the league. But they had a wee blip around about April time, which allowed David Healy's Linfield to creep up on them. And then in the second last weekend of the season, Crusaders lost at Ballymena, and Linfield won quite emphatically. I think it was either the, what was it? Was it Dungannon? It was one of the sort of peripheral teams anyway, and basically leapfrogged Crews at the very end of the season, meaning that as long as Linfield avoided defeat on the last day away to Cliftonville, they would win the league, having been on Crusaders' coattails all season, to the point where Crusaders had released three in a row badges a few weeks in advance of the end of the season, which has been made them a bit of a laughing stock towards the end of the year. But you know, they've been at the top of their game for the last couple of seasons. That wee blip aside towards the end of last season, I would still say that although Linfield have maybe got strength and depth, and they've got the Healy factor, as they call it over here, Crews are definitely, in my opinion, the top team in this league for this season.
Is there any kind of familiar faces that we should be looking out for and amongst the lads on Saturday?
I wouldn't say anyone familiar to Scottish football necessarily, but over the summer they brought in Brian Jensen, the former Burnley and West Brom goalkeeper.
Mm-hmm.
He's come in, he's took the number one jersey for this season at 42 years old, and he's looked decent so far. I mean, the Crews have made a good start to the season. They're sitting fourth in the league at the moment. They are playing in the League Cup this evening against Championship side Derrickview. It's Dundella. They're playing against one of the Premier Intermediate teams over here, and then at one of the junior teams. But they've had a decent start. The first couple of games, they scored 11 goals in their first two games. Which shows just how potent they can be up front. And then they lost 2-1 to Coleraine, who were, they were threatened. They were tearing around the bottom of the league around about Christmas time last year, and then went on this massive unbeaten run, which took them to the cusp of Europe towards the end of last season. And they've started the season brilliantly. They're sitting at the top, I think. Coleraine are top. I think only Glenavon are ahead of them just now. Crews bounced back from that by winning the North Belfast Derby on Saturday. They won that 2-1 against Cliftonville. And Jensen had some good stops in although they could beat by Coleraine, had some good stops in that game. And it was decent enough on Saturday from what I've seen as well there. But he would be the one that I would say most people would know. But over here, most people will know Crews for being great in attack. They've got Jordan Owens, who is the club's all-time top goal scorer. He's, if Wikipedia is to be believed anyway, I did a quick bit of wiki in before I came on. He's got 182 goals and 430 appearances for the Crews, which, you know, is for a 28-year-old, it's not a bad return in this league. And he's ably assisted by a guy that I would love to see in claret and amber, this boy called Paul Heatley. Who, if anybody's been watching any of the Irish League show or even the few games that were in Sky last season, Paul Heatley scores worldies for fun. He's nippy, he's energetic, loves to get into the box. And again, his stats at the minute, 108 goals and 213 appearances for the Crews. And
the two of them have been pivotal in the success at Seaview over the last couple of seasons, and I don't see that stopping this season either.
You've talked a wee bit about the standard of Northern Irish football, and while I don't think it does have a reputation for being as good as our game, the under-20s, despite all their success, are really going to have to be on their game. Do you think it's a physical challenge that is the biggest task for Stephen Craigan's men on Saturday?
I think the physical side of it is going to play a big impact, or play a big part. The tackles fly in the Irish League every week, and again, referring back to the Irish League show that you can see in BBC iPlayer, if anybody goes on to that and watches the highlights from Saturday's Crusaders v Cliftonville game, you'll just see how rough it was. Crusaders had their captain, Colin Coates, sent off for a second booking, which, you know, it was a needless challenge in the middle of the park for the second booking, which would probably have merited a red in that environment in the first place. And then one of Crusaders' better attacking guys, a guy called Declan Cadell, he was on the receiving end of a horrific challenge from Cliftonville's Levi Ives, which has almost certainly definitely put him out of this weekend's game anyway, but could put him out for maybe a month or two. He put a few pictures on Twitter on Saturday night, and his leg has just got two massive stud rakes down it, probably maybe about half an inch deep for both of them. So a horrific challenge. But having watched enough of the Irish League, particularly more at the lower end of the Irish League, those kind of tackles are 10 a penny. And with it being an artificial park at Seaview, the well under 20s are going to have their wits about them to avoid some pretty hefty challenges.
And for you personally, it must be nice to have the prospect of seeing a Motherwell side turning out closer to what you now refer to as home. So that'll be an exciting one for you. I'm quite disappointed myself personally. We're not able to go now due to the lack of demand for spaces in the club bus. So that was pretty disappointing. But for you, it will be a nice short journey, I suppose.
Yeah, it will be. I mean, I say any time I get a chance to do football over here, I'll gladly take it. I've been lucky enough to get involved with the Belfast Telegraph and Sunday Life since moving over here, so I have watched a fair bit of football, but it's mainly been Carrick Rangers because they would be my local top tier team to where I live down in Larne. Unfortunately, Larne themselves haven't been able to get back up into the Premiership since I've been here, but I don't mind going along to Taylor's Avenue to see Carrick. They've been at the lower end. They've survived relegation in the two seasons that I've been going to see them, but any opportunity I've had to go and watch Crusaders, I've enjoyed it. I like their wee stadium. I think it's maybe about 2,500, 3,000 that it seats. It's an artificial park, but it's nice and compact. It's like in the middle of a housing estate, which gives it a kind of homely feel to it as well. And Crusaders, by and large, if you're watching them, you know, you're pretty much guaranteed goals, you're guaranteed action, and it'll be good to see the comparison between them and the well under 20s as well. So it's going to be good from both sides of it, you know, getting to watch local football and get to watch a wee bit of my own team as well. So I'm thoroughly looking forward to it. And obviously, you know, it'll be good to see how Shea Gordon gets on coming back to Northern Ireland and seeing how he adapts to playing in front of what potentially is a wee bit of a home crowd for him.
First and foremost, did I hear you at any point say that everyone's invited back to stay at your house after the game in case they can't go home? Is that all right?
I'm a wee bit far away. See, where Seaview is, Seaview is pretty much right across the road from the harbour. So you basically come out of the harbour estate and Seaview is, you know, 5 minutes across the motorway from it. So, you know, if you wanted to travel, you know, 20, 30 minutes back down to Larne, no, it's a wee bit of a trek, especially for people over here. What I've learned, or the biggest takeaway I've had from living over here, is if anyone needs to travel more than 30 minutes to get anywhere, they won't go, which is, you know, a bit of a shame, particularly in the football sense. I went there the first game of last season. I was down in Glenavon, which is about an hour away from where I live, so maybe about half an hour outside of Belfast. and they were playing Carrick. So, you know, if you're a Carrick fan, that's maybe about a 45-minute journey, opening day of the season, you know, fresh start, survive relegation in the last day of the season the year before, take along a big crowd, you know, make a day of it. I think it was about 30 away fans made the journey just purely because they couldn't be bothered travelling the 45 minutes, which I think is a wee bit of detriment to the Irish League over here. You know, there's a lot of things that are good about the Irish League for it being very, very low in funds and, you know, being very sort of community based. There could be a lot more people going to the games. You know, if we think seeing half-empty stadiums in Scotland's bad, then the Irish League, you know, it does itself no favours as well. And for it being a much smaller company than what Scotland is, it could be much better supported. But a lot of teams over here, there are a lot of fans would play junior football. Junior games usually kick off about 1 o'clock or 2 o'clock on a Saturday, which means if you're playing in a junior game, it's got your hard push to get to a senior game, and that really is to the detriment. Although, depending on who you believe and what you read, the money that's available in the junior leagues for players can be a wee bit better than playing in the top leagues. So you can sometimes see the reason why people would prefer to go and play junior as opposed to heading up to Windsor Park or Seaview or whatever to go and take in a game.
And just finally, you're following Motherwell from afar these days, but you'll have been encouraged by the results so far this season. It was a difficult start in the league with the very undeserved defeat, I think we could all agree on, the opening day, followed by a bit of a Craig Thompson show at St Johnstone. But since then, the win over Ross County and then Saturday's win over Hearts, it's plenty of signs for encouragement going into the international break.
Oh, definitely, yeah. I think, I know it's a bit of a cliche, but I think the international break's probably coming at the worst time for us. You know, we're on a bit of a run, two-game winning streak. The team's starting to gel in the new formation. You know, we're making cult heroes out of Cedric Kipre just now. Louis Moulkes found his touch again. So, you know, a week off, you know, it's maybe going to dent the momentum that's been gained over the last couple of weeks, but you know, looking at the fixture list before the season started, you know, I didn't fear dangers. I thought, you know, St Johnstone would maybe have been a wee bit of a tough game, but I thought we'd have come through it. I actually thought that the Hearts game would have been the toughest one, you know, obviously before the start of the season and whatnot. But, you know, as you say, a narrow defeat to Rangers, which, you know, was maybe undeserved, but again, they took their chances, we didn't, in that game, which is the story of the... So they've been a Motherwell fan, I suppose, particularly over the last couple of years, just not being as clinical in front of goal as we could be. St Johnstone game, obviously a write-off because of all the red cards. But since then, you know, it seems to have bandied the team together. It seems like there's a bit of camaraderie within the team as well. You know, under McGee for the last couple of seasons and even under Bardacliff, the players seem to be under a wee bit of a cloud. I don't think that, you know, coming from behind against Hearts at the weekend there, I don't think we'd have managed that under McGee or Barraclough. So, you know, to see that we've got that resolve coming back, winning and doing it in some style with Maltley's goal, and being able to, you know, see the game out for a full half fairly comfortably, you know, it's positive signs, and I'm loving it. I'm loving everything about the club at the moment. I just wish that I could get to see them more often and, you know, get down to Firth Park a lot more regularly than what I've been able to.
Yeah, I suppose the other prospect is maybe a trip home, should it be for a semi-final or perhaps even a final, the Betfred League Cup.
My next jaunt home that I've got planned is for the away game up at Aberdeen in November, but if things go well, I don't know if that game will get postponed because we might be in the cup final, or even worse, Aberdeen might be in the cup final. I think that's the week or the weekend before we're due to play them in the league, so I don't know if that would have an impact on it or not. You know, that's what I'm looking forward to. You know, the last couple of times I've seen you has been up in Inverness, because myself and the guys that we go to Firth Park with, we always make a pilgrimage up north for that game, which usually, you know, October, November time. But with Inverness being out of the league this year, we've chosen Aberdeen to do. But hopefully I'll get to Fir Park at some point as well, and hopefully I'll not be as much of a curse as I've been, because I think apart from the 1-0 win at Inverness in the opening day of the season with Wes Fletcher's goal, which I think was the last time I was on the podcast, any time I've seen Motherwell, we've been gubbed. So hopefully next time I get to see the team, we'll get a win.
Yeah, things are certainly looking a great deal more positive at this moment in time. And yeah, I look forward to seeing you when you are back, Chris. Thank you very much for taking time out your day to speak to us, and certainly enjoy attending the match on Saturday. I'll look forward to following your updates on it, and here's hoping we can spring a surprise and continue to progress in this competition.
Yeah, no worries at all. And as I say, it's great to be on. And as I say, you know, I don't know why I'm plugging it, but for anybody that's wanting to get a wee bit more of a feel for Irish League football, go and watch the Irish League show on BBC iPlayer. It's not the greatest produced show. It's very much like the old broom cupboard with Philip Schofield and Andy Peters, but minus Ed the Duck and the way that it's set out. But you'll get a right feel for the sort of style and the play and what's involved in the Irish League. This season, as I say, Crusaders have started well. Linfield are going good guns. Glenavon, who I would say would be the closest team to being like Motherwell, in terms of the young players that they bring through, the experience tests they've got in their team, and the style of play that they have. It's very reminiscent, certainly when I was watching them last season anyway, very much like the sort of Higdon, Murphy, Oyama era that we had going forward. So they would be a team that I would wholeheartedly recommend folk to sort of seek out on the Irish League show. And just, you know, the one thing that you always get in the Irish League, even though it might be bereft of, you know, skill and quality throughout the teams, you're always going to see great goals, thumping tackles, controversy, poor refereeing. You know, it's got everything in it. And I think I've said this to a lot of people over here. You know, a lot of people in Northern Ireland, instead of supporting a local team, they would rather support an English Premiership team and not go out and watch the local team. But see, because it's not as nowhere near as polished as the English Premiership, it's nowhere near as good quality. It's just good blood and snotters football, as Graham Barnstable would say. So I'd thoroughly recommend folks seeking out and giving it a watch, even if, you know, if you're not coming over to see Crusaders this weekend. Just have a gander at it, and you'll see. You know, you might moan about Scottish football being, you know, a bit clumsy and a bit rubbish at times, but that's what makes the Irish League what it is for me.
Yeah, it certainly sounds quite familiar to our game, and hopefully after that, really good plug as well, that you might end up being the duck in the broom cupboard at one stage as well down the line. Chris, thanks again, mate.
No worries, Andy. Thanks a lot.
Finish up by talking about the shirt drive held at Fir Park earlier on today. A decent turnout. Good to see some familiar faces discuss all things Motherwell for a morning. Thanks to everyone who also donated so generously as well. We're sitting at around about £285 in last count, so that will obviously go into the Les Hutchison thing as well, Jay, where he doubles all monies coming into the Well Society. So certainly a very productive morning. Thanks to Suzanne Reid and her team as well for opening up on a Sunday morning, particularly after a late night boxing match and everything else. I know it's not always going to be the top thing in your priority list, particularly when you've been at Fir Park the day before as well. But I suppose that's what we need to keep on trying to do, Jay, just kind of come up with suggestions and ideas and see how it goes. It's a bit of a kind of suck it and see type thing.
Aye, that's it. I mean, you know, whether it's the Sevens tournament that the Society did, the whiskey trip, or, you know, the podcast shirt drive and stuff like that. I mean, one of the criticisms, quite rightfully so, for the start of the year, levelled at the Society has been the whole double your money thing, and the fact that they've not been taking, you know, the opportunity there to you know, I know you get a wee kick out of the idea of Wes having to put his hand in his pocket, as you said in the podcast last week, but, you know, the chance is there to, again, not necessarily double your money, it's obviously slashing the loans that are there, which, you know, would be massive for the Society and therefore the club anyway, So yeah, I mean, based on, there's a lot of things going on, recruitment drives, we're going to be starting a new sort of campaign soon just to try and get that message out there that the Welsh Society is actually an investor, it isn't just this group that hangs about. I mean, you know, they put the money straight in the club. You've got things like the whiskey trip, like the sevens tournament, like the shirt drive. And it's just about putting those things out there, and it's then up to the fans to get involved. You know, that's a criticism that I've been, you know, the most critical person of the Welsh Society for years, hence why I'm, you know, wanted to be on the board. But, you know, you obviously put these things out there, and then at least if we get to the end of the year and we've raised a decent total and that's doubled, if fans then want to criticise and say, oh, well, what were you doing? You can at least say, well, we did this, this, this and this. If you didn't support it, then, you know, that's your fault. At the end of the day, there are lots of avenues at the moment that fans can contribute and actually get something for their money. Again, that's something that society got pelters for, again, from myself and from others for years, was that it was almost just a begging bowl. And it was, you know, the worst part was that stuff about, you know, forego a pint before a game, before a home game, and every month you can put a fiver in. And it's like, well, there's more to it.
I like pints.
But also, you can say that about literally anything. I mean, that's just, all right, I'll join every charity in the world then. Because
don't feed your child dinner one day a week, well, and I mean, then you'll be able to donate.
Aye, and it was all, and it was tied in with the whole, oh, join the Welsh Society because there's scary South Americans about to invest in the club. You know, it's about giving folk the opportunity to put money in and to feel as though they're putting money in for a reason, whether it's to, you know, get a new shirt for sevens, well, or a second-hand shirt for sevens, whether it's to, you know, playing a sevens tournament or going a whiskey day or just actually get, you know, decent benefits as a member of the Welsh Society. It's all about giving somebody, you know, people something for their money. And, you know, we would all love to think that, we've all got the blind loyalty that we would just chuck money at the Welsh Society and the club. But, you know, none of us are in that situation, or very few of us in a situation where we can afford to do that without at least feeling as though it's worthwhile and we're getting something. So, it's just about putting things out there. I know that obviously, you know, Craig is working at the Welsh Society on future events, and there's going to be other things. We're launching an Exiles Club soon as well. And it's all just about kind of working to try and give Motherwell fans, you know, reason to put money in. Again, or, you know, also one of the reasons being that they now directly pay for Cedric Kiepre to stay at this football club and things like that. But it's, yeah, every penny counts, essentially. You know, whether it's buckets at Fir Park, which I think we were supposed to be doing this season. I need to double-check why that's not happened yet. But literally every penny counts, because it all mounts up, and then when Les doubles it, then, you know, you will be talking, as I said earlier, the Welsh Society raises from membership fees about 120, 130 grand anyway. So anything above that, you know, if we can push towards, you know, 200 grand, something along those lines, then that's, you know, £400,000 in total once Les has doubled it. We're talking big, big money here. So although it's, you know, a couple of hundred quid here or there, when it all comes together, it's massive. And again, it's all about putting the club in the ideal situation moving forward, that guys like Kiepre, guys like Biggie, you know, Louis Moult potentially staying, you know, that those are those things are the norm and they're not the one-off. And the only way we can do that is by putting, you know, money in through the Welsh Society.
Yeah, and I think that I've talked with the people that came up today and put their hands in their pockets and walked away with, there's a lot of good stuff, and people seem genuinely quite surprised that they were going along and seeing a good range of football shirts. There was a lot of people also came up to Fir Park and made very generous donations of their unwanted kits, or their kits that didn't fit them quite as nicely as they used to, or whatever. But there was a really good response, and it's much appreciated that people do get involved. This is all working towards the release of Off Air 3, where the fans have been voting on the 25 greatest post-war Motherwell players. So again, that's something that the fans have got behind, in terms of, I think we're over 500 to 600 votes, so that's very, very impressive. And hopefully, I know for a fact we've got a good range of players across the age groups, so yeah, it'll be very interesting to see when voting finishes on Friday who comes out on top. And the only way to find out is by ordering a copy of Off Air 3, so if you've not done it, please do. Jay, I think that's pretty much all we've got time for. It's bloody roasting in here.
No, I have.
You've been listening to the MFC podcast. We'll be back next Monday. Until then, thank you and goodbye.
over. Tell me I'm already. You bite your tongue, you clench your jaw. Work lights up for nose and the subway, the subseas are taking control. Eyes look back, those surround the room in the back of my car. She changed her tune. Same black Converse, wiping the verse. Say something stronger, say something stronger. Same black Converse, wiping the verse. Say something stronger, say something stronger.
Say something stronger.